Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab Podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl. Today, we're going to analyze a gentleman by the name of Rob Roswell, who has a very inspiring story. He's going to tell everybody who he is, where he's from, number one. But we'll go into his first deal, which was a 70 unit. And then with time, we'll maybe go through a few more as well. Rob, how's it going? Man?
Going fantastic. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too.
You out there in the shop working?
Out there in the shop. I'm actually, I got a manager on vacation this week and my district manager is handling another store. So I jumped in for a couple hours today. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you made time to be on the Deal Lab. Really appreciate that.
Right on.
And why don't you tell everybody who you are and where you're from?
My name is Rob Roswell. I live in San Diego, California.
Beautiful San Diego.
Yes.
So we're going to go into your very first deal, which was a 70 unit. All right. So why don't we jump right into that and talk about how did you get that deal? How did you find it? You know, what brought it to you?
You know, actually, a month before that, same 1031 money, I went into a 96 unit deal with a couple of partners, a couple of other students. Eric Stewart is one of those and Addy is another one of those. And I was looking for a place to place some 1031 money. And I reached out to Eric as I was sniffing deals. I reached out to Eric on the loan side because he's been my guy that I've gone to for information. He's invested quite a bit of time with me. He's very generous with his time. And yeah. When I reached out to him, he says, oh, you're looking in the St. Louis area. Well, what a coincidence. I've got a deal in the St. Louis area that you might be interested in. We met a few times on that. And I actually 1031'd into a tick with my 1031 money and worked that deal. We syndicated 50% of the deal and we had the tick for the other 50%.
So that's going into the 70 unit.
That was a 96 unit just before the 70 unit.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So that
was 1031'd out of the 96 into the 70.
I'm sorry. I'm confusing the whole situation. I 1031 into the 96.
Oh.
The 70, I 1031 into the following month. So the first deal was actually the 96, Dave.
Okay. We went in with partners. Did the partners bring you that deal?
Yes. Yes. They were already in the process of the physical and the financial due diligence on that one by the time I jumped in, and I just confirmed that they were on track and they were doing a great job, and the deal actually is still performing very well today. Yes.
So you said there were other students. Did you meet him at an event?
Addy, I met at UP.
Ultimate
so
partnering?
I had met him, but this was his backdoor thing. I actually met him again because he was already partnering up with Eric on this deal.
Oh, that's interesting. So you met him there and all of a sudden you collided again.
Yes.
Excellent. So you jumped into the due diligence, then you jumped into the 70 with Eric. So Eric had another deal.
No, the 70 was actually my wife and I. Eric,
oh, okay.
Eric did do the financing on that, but that is 100% my wife and I on the 70. Yeah.
Well, how'd you get that deal? Where'd you find it?
That was broker relations. I had kicked a lot of tires that didn't make sense with the guy. And I initially met him on LoopNet. As we know, most of the time, that's the trash can for deals, but it's not necessarily the trash can for finding brokers. And that's how I started with my broker. And
good strategy.
Yeah. Taught by Dave Lindahl. It's a great strategy, actually.
Yeah. So you found the broker on that deal. And then did you use the basic strategy of, hey, you know, I saw your deal on here. It doesn't really work. This is how I buy. And then did you have commonality with this particular person? Or how did you keep in contact with him? And how did you get that his next listing?
You know, the truth be told on this one, it didn't make sense. But by the time we got to the bartering table, we got it to make sense. It was on the verge of not making sense, as far as the trilogy goes, Trinity. But The seller came to his senses a little bit at a time, more and more, and it finally came around and made sense. So the deal that initially I contacted him about that we passed on, and he shared deal after deal after deal that also didn't make sense. We ended up back at the first deal when the seller had come to his senses.
Interesting. Did the seller go in and out of contract with a buyer or two before that?
I think he had. Not from the first time we looked at it, but I think before we looked at it, I believe he had, Dave. Yeah.
So the seller got worn down and came to his senses and put it within a range where you could buy it at and be within the Trinity and be comfortable moving forward. Good. So what type of value play or value add did that particular deal have? Well, what attracted you to it when the numbers started making sense?
This one made sense for a number of different reasons. One of them, there's a lot of room in the basements of these units. There's 10 buildings there that had the ability to create some storage for $25 a month per storage. So that was the value play that we had stumbled across when looking at the deal. But this was 7 10-plexes. That the seller had purchased all boarded up, and one at a time, he went through them using permits and everything with new AC, new electrical, new everything. So as far as physical condition, everything with permits had just been gone through one building at a time. You know, naturally, since we weren't syndicating the deal, I didn't necessarily have to meet the Trinity because it was just my wife and I doing a 1031. We were just looking for a safe harbor for something to hold on to for a long time with a good return, you know. But here's an interesting thing that happened during the negotiations is we had the financing in place, and the property manager who knew they weren't staying took their eye off the ball, and the collections went way down.
Uh-huh.
So we could not get the loan that they had promised until collections came up. And by the time we got to 3 or 4 months down the road of them trying to do that, they still couldn't get them up. So it came to the point where we weren't going to get the loan if he didn't lower the price. So he did.
Okay. So or the other option is the bank tells you to come to the table with money, right?
That's right. He did try that. Oh, absolutely. But it ended up being 150 grand is where he had to come down in order for me to get the loan. Yeah.
And that's, you know, we talk about what's happening now with the COVID-19 and how it's affecting the real estate market. And I talk to people and I tell them, you know, you got to watch those numbers because the bank's going to watch the numbers.
Right.
And if you don't put something inside of your purchase and sale agreement that basically states you're buying based on a cap rate, you know, the cap rate that you agreed on the purchase price. And as long as the collections remain the same, then you get the price. But if they go down, you know, that price has to lower because the bank's going to be watching that as well. And there's also a risk of that. If the collections actually go up, then you pay a little bit higher price, but at least you're paying at the cap rate that you knew you're buying at, and the numbers typically would make sense.
Absolutely.
So that's an interesting surprise. What other surprises did you have in that deal?
Well, it's funny you should ask. A month after owning that, we bought it on, I think it was December the 27th. On January the 11th of 2018, we had a fire. Somebody fell asleep while cooking, and it literally took out one of the buildings. Yeah, it was an interesting experience that it was great.
We lost you for about 30 seconds, but I think I can fill the gap in. So you had a fire, you lost an entire building, but with that entire building lost, you still cash flowed?
We still cash flowed. We still held our own, yeah.
Wow, that's really good. That's another good point that we bring up is the fact that, you know, you want to buy a property that has a break even, you know, in the high 70s or the lowest of the 80s, because the higher your break even, you know, when something like that happens, you're going to have much more difficult time keeping that property running smoothly.
Yeah. And it took a year. It literally put the insurance and the construction, and it was a full year to get us back to 70, back to 70. Yeah.
So how did you make out on that? Did you get a third party? What's the term I'm looking for?
I know what you're talking about, and the answer is yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. So neither one of us can remember the term, but there's a third-party agency that will come in and negotiate with the insurance company.
Yes.
A public adjuster. So a public adjuster will come in, negotiate on your behalf with the insurance company. You pay them typically 10% of whatever they get, but they usually get you 2 or 3 times what you normally would have gotten. So how'd you make out? You make out well on that?
We did really well, actually. We were able to do some CapEx to the building and probably in the neighborhood of $50,000 in addition to what the expenses on the rebuild was. Yeah.
Great. So how much do you still own that property?
Yes.
How much equity do you think you have in that one?
That's a great question. if I were to ballpark it, Dave, I would say somewhere around 900-ish.
Nice.
Yeah.
And did you put any of your own money in? Oh, you had some 1031 exchange money, did you say?
Yeah, 1031, 5-ish went in. We're roughly around 9-ish nowadays, yeah.
Did you have other investors in that deal, or is this yours?
Yeah, just my wife and I.
Great. Any other surprises about that particular deal? How long you plan on holding it?
That's a keeper. I think because of the neighborhood and because it does strong, that's a keeper. That's at least a 10-year hold. We're a couple, 3 years into it. I will tell you, it's just an extraordinary circumstance that happened is a 32 unit right down the street. There's a football field and a half of bare land in between it, the 32 and the 70. That became available. Same broker. He called me. We 1031 some other things into the 32, and with the same amount of property manager, the same amount of maintenance guy, it went from a 70 to a 102.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So on that same street, we're going to rename it Rob Boulevard because it looks like we're going to own a few more on that street too.
Where are you? Where city is that in?
St. Louis.
Oh, that's right. St. Louis. Yep. Yeah, I own one in St. Louis as well. Hey, have you been to... what is that ice cream store? I took a class over Goldman Sachs had a small business 10,000. They have the small business 10,000 initiative, and they've got this 3-month class where they take you in and you tell them, you know, where you want to bring your business, and then everybody comes in. Oh, it's called Clementine's. So different business owners come in and then they go through this 3-month class. You're at the for the last week and a half of the class, you're there and you're doing presentations about how you're going to grow your business. And one of the girl in my group, she owned Clementine's in St. Louis. It's the only ice cream place that I know of that actually mixes alcohol with the ice cream. Now, you can get it without the alcohol too, but there's they call it crack. And it's kind of like a salted caramel, but man, it is really, really good. They call it crack because you crack the top of it. But man, it's really, really good. Before we go into additional units, I just want to hold up your book. This is Rob's book that he wrote. It's called Addicted to Life. And he sent me a copy and wrote me a really nice note on the inside. But do you want to tell everybody your backstory? And I'm sure you're going to inspire a lot of folks out there.
I'd be happy to. You know, my wife, Claudia, and I were living on the streets homeless in 1999. I'm a recovered crystal meth and crack cocaine addict. And my wife has never done drugs and alcohol. She was addicted to Rob, and she could see in me what other people can't. And while her parents and my parents told her to run like hell, she wouldn't listen because she believed in me. And now she's enjoying the fruits of her faith at this day and age. But yeah, you know, so the book talks about the secondary title is how I went from homelessness to from homeless to extraordinary success and happiness in a short period of time. And the book takes you through chapter one starts in a jail cell, literally. And every chapter has a different mugshot of mine to begin the chapter. I only needed 8 mugshots. I had a lot to choose from, but I chose chose my favorite 8 for the book. And the forward in the first half of each chapter is our story. And the second half of each chapter is the principles of success that we use to get out of that lifestyle and that anybody can use to get out of a life of mediocrity. And I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit as we talk about chapter 7. The name of chapter 7 is the law of exposure. And the law of exposure says, what you expose yourself to, you shall become. And I'll let the cat out of the bag. Dave Lindahl, Jeannie Orlowski, and Jeff Lindahl, and a number of people in your organization are named in that chapter because of that law of exposure, I have become the multifamily investor today that I am. So I want to thank you publicly and just let you know, I can't thank you and your team and your principles of success enough, Dave.
Well, one of the greatest gifts that you can give us here is the fact that, you know, you actually take what we give and go out and use it because we know right. It works. We've been doing it since 2002, teaching it. We know it works. And when somebody goes out and works it, then it's a beautiful thing. That's such it's such an inspiration, you know, somebody that was down and out, you know, turns their life around. It just goes to show that anybody, no matter where you are, you know, wherever your position is in life right now, you can just change it. But you got to make that decision. Absolutely. That you want to change it or you're going to change it. And the decision takes action. And there's going to be a lot of hurdles along the way. You're going to fall down a lot of times along the way. So as long as you keep getting yourself up and dusting yourself off. And it's not just real estate that you invested in. You also talk about your automotive business.
Yeah, and the book goes in depth about how we got our first two businesses with no money down. Old Carlton Sheets methods that I got the home study course of Carlton Sheets back in the day. I never did buy a...
I got that.
I know. a lot of people don't even know who that is, but us old folks with a few gray hairs, we know who old Carlton is with his infomercials. But that taught me the principles. I never did buy a house with no money down at that point in my life, but I bought my first two auto repair shops that way. And currently we have four auto repair shops here in San Diego. And that is our, if you will, our day job. I still operate those. I have a district manager in place that runs the stores, but from time to time, I still jump in and, you know, that's been the foundation of our success was business ownership, and real estate has been the avenue in which to invest intelligently, right?
So I just want everybody to know that the name of that book is Addicted to Life. You can get it on Amazon, Addicted to Life. There's all kinds of great life lessons in there. So talk about for your automotive business for a second, and talk about the business systems that you put in place that allowed you to multiply to three properties, because the same type of mentality and processes is what you use in any business like multifamily to go, because each multifamily property is a separate business, just like each auto dealership is. So you want to talk about that a little bit? How did you get there?
You know, you're exactly right. You can run a store kind of, you know, what they refer to as command and control. You don't need systems. You're pretty much everything. And we call it, in our business, we call it the dad syndrome. Dad, what do we do next? What do we do next? What do we do next? You can even have two locations if they're not too far apart, because you can be at one half a day and the second one, the second half a day. But if you want to have any addition to that, three locations, four locations, we're currently looking at location number five. You got to put systems in place that your people follow when you're not around. And, you know, Robert Kiyosaki refers to a business as something that if you go away for a year and you come back, it should have grown. That's a real business. It should not have fail because you're not around. And that's really the key, is putting systems in place that people are incentivized to want to accomplish the same things as you would if you were in the building, even when you're not in the building, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Joan Worlow has a really good book called Built to Sell. Have you read that one?
No, I haven't.
That's all about, you know, putting in the system so that you're not the main rainmaker. You know, at any time you can walk away or sell it off.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So congratulations on those. Number five. That's awesome.
Right.
So you now have, you bought after the 70, you got a 32, a 60, 193, and 104. So the 32 was also on the same street. Is that the one you just talked about? Okay.
Yes.
So where's the 60?
Actually, there was another 32 by pure coincidence, a 32 that's a B-class building also in St. Louis on a different street. We 1031 into that last year. And the 193 is actually with the 60. It was a two property package that was 253. That was December of last year. And that was with some students. I know you know some of them very well. Brian Darisay is a partner on that deal as well.
Brian's my surfing partner. Every time I go to San Diego, He pulls up in a van at 5:30 in the morning with a wetsuit and a board.
God bless him.
We go over to Scribbs.
That's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun.
Are you a surfer? So
I am a surfer, yes.
Oh, yeah. Next time I come, we'll pick you up.
I would love to join you guys. It's never worked out for my calendar, and you guys have been doing it. I've been either out of town or whatever, but I'd love to join you guys. Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Absolutely.
So the 253 was a two-property deal with Brian and Eric Stewart and a couple of other students that actually found the deal, you know. So and that deal's been doing very well. Both of these deals, the 104 and the 253, were just before COVID. They both just closed in December, Dave. So COVID was a great test for how we did the numbers, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you make out? What did you put in place when you first realized that this was here, this pandemic was here, and it was going to affect your properties? How did you react?
You know, it was a strategy session with the individual property managers to come up with a plan of, okay, it's not going to be free rent. Unfortunately, the media was not very friendly to us. The media immediately was throwing it out there. Everybody's going to get free, everything, right?
Or they were telling you don't pay your rent.
Right. It was a bit of a challenge. So we immediately put into place, hey, it's not free, it's deferred. And these are the qualifications in order to meet those requirements. As you know, number one, you got to show us some sort of proof that this has negatively affected your income, a layoff notice of some sort or what have you. Number two, we've got to show some affirmative action that you're doing something about it, either application for unemployment, application for public assistance programs. And we held their hand through the process. You know, out of 253 doors, we had six people actually apply. And wow. all of them are caught up at this point.
How about the ones that didn't apply? And did you have more skips than usual? Skip meaning that they took off. Not for your benefit, for anybody that doesn't know what a skip is. Somebody that takes off, you know, in the middle of the night. Did you have any skips? More skips than normal? You're always going to have skips on a property.
I think, quite honestly, from going on memory here, nothing stands out that was really out of the ordinary, Dave. I think the people that skipped were people that were already in the foreclosure process or people we were happy to see go.
Yeah. It's much better when they skip because you don't have to go through the whole eviction proceedings and that costs you money.
Right.
Also, right. It's great when they skip. Your main rents came in okay?
Main rents came in okay. And matter of fact, all we did differently was we held off on the first quarter disbursements just to see how April did. And, you know, we've already sent out those disbursements and they're right as we had predicted.
That's great.
Yeah.
At the beginning of last call, I actually talked about a study that was done on multifamily ownership and the fact that they're basically only seeing about a 5 or 6% decline in revenues and that the good property managers were not seeing the decline. And the smaller ones weren't seeing the decline because they were more, they typically have a better relationship with their tenants. And the people that weren't operating efficiently were the ones that were seeing the decline.
Right.
Marginal owners, I call them, marginal ownerships that never really learned how to operate properly. So that's good stuff. All right. So let's talk about, I know you're busy. I'm going to keep you for just a couple more minutes. Okay.
I'm okay.
What did you, in terms of the teachings that you learned at RE Mentor, what did you use or what particular classes do you think were most important for you to get to where you are?
Wow, that's good. That's really good. Probably one of the most essential classes was managing the managers. I've attended that a couple of times. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are common sense, but just you don't think of when you're in the heat of the battle and your property, your on-site management or the regional, whoever you're dealing with directly, usually the regional will come at you like things are just industry standard, but really they're not. They're their standard that don't necessarily benefit the property owner. And right. Just little details. And, you know, keeping honest people honest is a weekly job. I think I hope everybody understands that the Monday morning report is called a Monday morning report because you need it each and every Monday to make sure that that plane that's leaving San Diego is still heading towards San Francisco and not Tokyo, right? I mean, that's the key, is to make sure that plane is going in the right direction, right?
Good analogy. You know, here's the most important thing about the Monday morning report is that people actually read it, you know?
Right.
Because a lot of people will get it and they won't read it. And then the second most important thing is that when you see any numbers that are outliers is that you pick up that phone and find out why.
Absolutely.
You know what you're going to do about it. It's funny that you mentioned managing the manager first, because that's probably the least sexy of all the events. Now it's only offered digitally because, you know, the people just weren't showing up for it. Even though they buy a big package and they get it in the package, they still wouldn't show up for it because it wasn't sexy. It wasn't teaching you how to buy a $1 million property and it wasn't teaching you how to raise $1 million for your funds. It was teaching you how to actually operate it after you did those two things and got a property. You know, and the opportunity that we're going to see from owners that didn't actually learn how to operate properly, like take that course. You actually took it twice, you know, that course or any other way to get educated on how to operate. Those are the people that are going to give us the opportunity over the next couple of months because they never did it right. You know, and then when something happens to the property and the revenues get affected, they don't have the experience or the knowledge or the skills to fall back on to say, okay, this is my problem. This is how I deal with it. And that's when, you know, I did this special webinar I call it the 2020 opportunity. And that's what it's all about. It's all about these marginal owners that are just going to start, you know, popping up. And the smart ones are going to sell their properties because they're going to realize that they don't have the skill set and they're going to lose the property if they don't sell it. They're going to take away any equity that they can. And that's the first wave. And then the second wave are the people that weren't smart enough to sell it, that they tried to hang on, didn't have the skill set and had to give it back to the bank. And then you're either going to buy it before that, you're going to negotiate with the bank before they buy it, or you're going to get it from the bank afterwards. But there's a lot of opportunity coming up, Rob. I hope you're excited and getting ready for it.
Very much so.
Yeah, so talk about that P&L, that monthly P&L, profit and loss statement.
Well, it's funny that you should say the key to the MMR is that somebody's actually looking at it, because the P&L is a once-a-month ritual that for all of our businesses, not just our multifamily, but it's easy to review it and look for mistakes, but it's, as one of my mentors used to say, it's easier not to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we got to fight that you got to resist that and make sure we're digging into the detail report and looking for the little things that tend to get buried. Another phrase I've heard used is, and we're talking about property managers, the goose is fat and likes to eat a lot. So you've got to be careful about that goose and make sure that you're keeping it on the proper diet, right?
Well, the whole idea behind, you know, reading the Monday morning report and the profit and loss statement and then picking up the phone and asking questions is, if they know that you're minding the store, they're going to run the store efficiently.
Right.
If they think you're not minding the store, they're going to find, you know, these little, they won't run as efficiently as they could. This is the good ones. And if for some reason you didn't get a good property manager in there, you know, somebody that may not be as ethical as others, that's when the scams begin. When the bad ones are in there and they realize that you're not watching the numbers, they'll find ways to make sure that those numbers favor them. All kinds of ways. You know, being in this business for 24 years, I've been through all kinds of management scams. And a lot of them that I've shared on stage, you know, many times. I don't mind certainly telling you about my mistakes. It helps other people. But yeah, but and they're not all bad. You know, there's a lot of good ones out there. You just have to go through the process to get the good ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, you got to mind your numbers. And even if you're not a numbers person, get somebody that is a numbers person on your team or even your accountant and have them read those reports and ask the questions or give you the questions to ask. It's that important.
Pretty important.
What other systems do you have in place to keep your properties running efficiently, your rents coming in?
We actually, above and beyond doing the MMR, we actually meet virtually, like we're meeting right now, every single week with our on-site manager and regional at each location in different meetings, of course, and yep. Actually go over the numbers and ask whatever questions come about. We do a lot of email interaction, but I think, like you said, letting them know that you're minding the store, part of that is actually doing a video conference and hearing it directly from them. And I just think there's something magical in them knowing that that meeting's coming to make sure that things are getting done promptly and efficiently prior to the meeting.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
Especially when there's construction involved. If you're doing any type of rehabs or renovations, it's amazing to me how quickly 6 months goes by. And if you're not on it on a week-to-week basis, how slowly these projects get finished if you're not having your video conferences and getting updates.
Time is money.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're doing a repositioning, you know, or just upgrading units. Things don't get done unless somebody's watching the ball, number one. Number two, I mean, they got to be walking that property, walking those units when the contractor's on site every day, you know, to keep the contractor honest as well. Honest, yeah. Just to the point of showing up every day.
Right.
Squeaky wheel.
Absolutely.
All right. So what's next on your sites?
You know, we're still analyzing deals. We're still throwing them in the profit maker and just looking at numbers right now. I'm partners with a number of different students that we're looking at deals together all the time. We're still submitting LOIs, nothing that's made any sense. And apparently it makes sense to other people because we're not getting the bids, but we have our strike price and where we need to be. And some of these people are purchasing properties nowhere near where we need to be. And I think we're being fairly liberal with some of our numbers, but the right deal will be there. We're still looking.
That's right. The right one will come along and you don't get antsy, that's for sure, especially in this market. Hey, do you have any morning rituals?
Absolutely.
What do you do?
I'm an early guy. I'm a 3:30 in the morning guy. So that means I go to bed fairly early. 9 o'clock is past my bedtime, but I'm in the Word every single day. I think the spiritual foundation is the foundation of anything good in our lives. And I know for a fact, I mean, you know my background, you know, addicted to drugs and homeless. I'm no longer the man that I used to be, but I'm nowhere near the man I know I can be. So I know there's a daily growing that takes place by continually getting closer to God. And the way I get closer to Him is I become more like Him. And the way I become more like Him is by getting around Him. So I'm in the Word and prayer every single morning, as well as I have my reading time. Generally, it's 45 to 60 minutes. every single morning prior, you know, and that might be, you know, reading a good book or a Christian authored book or somebody that, you know, the books I read, just like you, Dave, they're not entertainment, they're growth books. So sometimes they're painful. They take a little time to get through, you know, I can be a couple months on a book because I want it to stick a little bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Rob, thanks for coming on to this call. I really appreciate it. You gave a lot of good information. And the next time I'm down there in San Diego, me and Brian are going to come by at 5:30 and pick you up while heading out to the surf.
Always a pleasure, man. Thank you, David.
Yep. Take care, my friend.
Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.